Hi everyone, welcome back to this podcast series on the life of Lucius Annaeus Seneca. This is podcast 8 and it will deal with the first part of Seneca's exile and one of the works that he wrote whilst in exile, which was is called the Ad Polybium. So, the year is AD 41. Claudius has been declared Emperor of Rome in what, from the records that survive, read like highly suspicious circumstances. As I pointed out in my last podcast, there's enough circumstantial evidence to suggest that Claudius, a very, very smart man, who'd survived thus far by portraying himself as a harmless academic, was more than capable of engineering the assassination of his nephew Caligula, and, with the collusion of the Praetorian Guards, getting himself elevated to the top job in the city and empire. One of Claudius's first acts as emperor was to recall his two nieces, Agrippina and Julia, Caligula's sisters, from exile. Seneca himself had been keeping a low profile during the latter years of Caligula's reign, partly because his written and oratorical style had attracted Caligula's negative attention, and partly because his acquaintance with Agrippina and Julia might indict him as a silent accomplice in the failed plot of AD 39 to usurp Caligula that had got the women exiled in the first place. The regime change and the recall of the sisters meant that Seneca could at last raise his head above the trenches and publish with relative impunity, or so he thought. This was the period in which, in my opinion, he most likely wrote De Ira, or On Anger, an attempt to get Rome's ruling classes to pour their collective heads in and meet the new Emperor Claudius halfway. The subject matter, which is essentially anger management, was pretty well chosen, as the Emperor himself is known to have authored and published a treatise on pretty much the same topic. Seneca's work was an appeal to senators, patricians, and even the emperor himself to keep a lid on their excesses and avoid the schisms and rifts that had plunged Rome into the ruinous civil wars of the previous century. Keep calm and carry on, was his message. After all, how can the new guy possibly be any worse than the one we've just got rid of? But composing De Ira was pretty much as far as Seneca got at the time. In late AD 41, Valeria Messalina, Claudius's third wife, whom the ancient commentators paint as a loose-moral nymphomaniac, seems to have grown jealous of the time the emperor was spending with his recalled niece Julia, and she trumped up a charge of adultery in which she also implicated Seneca. Both Julia and Seneca were exiled, she to one of the Pontine Islands, and he to Corsica. Although Claudius had intervened during Seneca's trial and persuaded the Senate to mitigate the sentence from one of execution to exile, Seneca was absolutely gutted. For him, literary recognition was everything. He even saw literature as a man's only real legacy, the only thing that could truly ensure his immortality. Sure, Seneca insisted in several places in his whole corpus, actually, that he was writing for the benefit of future generations, but there was also a large element of personal ego involved. I'd suggest that for somebody of Seneca's learning and disposition, literature, that is writing, was the equivalent of a drug. Seneca, you see, couldn't claim the illustrious pedigree of the patrician families. He was no Scipio or Julius descended from a celebrated clan or gens. Seneca came from an equestrian family, a family of knights, the Annaei. His weak lungs and ongoing pulmonary issues had ruled out a shot at fame on military campaign. The only thing he'd really excelled at was rhetoric and oratory. It was pretty much the only weapon in his arsenal. Just like Cicero a century before, Seneca was a novus homo, a new man, the Roman political equivalent of today's nouveau riche. And, just like Cicero before him, he'd arrived at the realization that his best chance at celebrity status and getting to the top of the heap was through his skill with words. So we can imagine his absolute frustration and annoyance when, after he'd had to hide his literary light under a bushel for 2 years, probably like going cold turkey for him, and after thinking it was safe to start putting his name out there again, he found himself exiled to Corsica. Seneca hated Corsica. Everything he wrote about the place was negative, and I'll come to that soon. But first, it's worthwhile taking an objective look at the place. When you look at a map of the Mediterranean, you'd be forgiven for thinking there are worse places than Corsica to be exiled to. It lies on roughly the same latitude as Rome, and, at its nearest, is only about 70 kilometres from the Italian mainland. Given a fair wind, a sea voyage to the capital of the empire is unlikely to have taken more than 2 or 3 days. Now compare that to the banishment of the poet Ovid a generation before. He'd been packed off to Tomis, modern-day Constanza in Romania, a settlement on the Black Sea coast, mind-numbingly freezing in winter, and I know I've been there in minus 20 degree weather, and a good 2,500 kilometres from the capital, and it's also separated by some pretty rough and dangerous terrain. Moreover, Corsica was pretty well Latinized. The Romans had annexed it around 238 BC. By Seneca's time, there were at least 2 Roman colonii on the island, Mariana and Aleria, the latter being a major seaport on the coast facing mainland Italy. Seneca doesn't state so, but it's odds on that it was to Aleria that he was exiled. But he whinged about the island non-stop. In one of the books he is known to have written during his exile, the Consolatio ad Polybium, or the Consolation to Polybius, of which more a bit later in this podcast, Seneca describes Corsica as an angulus, which means a corner or an out-of-the-way spot, and he laments that his ears are constantly assailed by the inconditus fremitus barbarorum, the uncouth roaring of the barbarians. It's so bad, he says, that he can barely bring to mind words in Latin. In another work written on Corsica, the Consolatio ad Helviam Matrem, he goes even further in his bagging of the island. In that work, he calls Corsica a nudum saxum, a bare rock. It is, he writes, a barren place, populated by uncivilized people, intemperate of climate, rugged and inhospitable. Could it really have been that bad? Was a Latinized Mediterranean island port city, relatively close to Rome, truly as barbarous and uncivilized as Seneca made it out to be? I suspect not. Seneca's main beef, you see, was not so much that he was in Corsica. He was far more upset, I reckon, by the fact that he wasn't in Rome. Rome was where everything was at. Rome, far more than any capital city of an empire before or since, was the true centre of the world. It was the urbs Roma, the city of Rome, and, contrary to the words of the modern-day song, if you couldn't make it there, you couldn't make it anywhere. Many ancient authors simply referred to Rome as the urbs, the city, and everyone knew where they meant. Seneca wasn't in Rome. He was on Corsica. And for somebody who relied on his words, his viva vox, or his living voice, to make others sit up and take notice of him, he was stymied. In order to further his career, Seneca desperately needed to wheedle his way back to Rome. Politically, he was hamstrung. Messalina still had Claudius's ear, and she obviously had it in for Seneca. He must have done something to upset her at some stage in order for her to have singled him in particular out as Julia Lavilla's lover in the adultery charge that had got the pair exiled. Therefore, any direct political appeal for a recall from exile would eventually be blocked by the emperor's wife. So what then could Seneca do? Well, he obviously sat and had a think about it, and he came to the conclusion that words were the only weapons he had available. Moreover, he realised there was more than one route to the emperor's ear. Messalina wasn't the only person Claudius listened to. Seneca just had to bide his time and wait for the opportunity to present itself. This, I think, was the time when Seneca took his first halting steps in what was to become an intricate and for him ultimately fatal literary dance with the Julio-Claudian emperors. Everything he wrote from here on in, every word, was loaded with layer upon layer of meaning. Literature, for Seneca, was about to become political opportunity. In AD 41, Claudius and Messalina produced a son, who was to become known to the world as Britannicus after his father's successful military campaign to bring Britannia under the Roman yoke in AD 43. After Claudius's return from Britain, he actually only stayed there 16 days, his commanders did all the dirty work, but probably before he celebrated his triumph for it back in Rome in AD 44, something else happened. Something in which Seneca saw an opportunity to end his exile. Claudius's survival in the cutthroat world of Julio-Claudian succession had been largely due to the people with whom he'd surrounded himself, not daring and too smart to get too close to any senatorial factions or their stooges. He'd surrounded himself with freedmen loyal to himself alone, and who seem, by their names, to have been mostly of Greek extraction. One of these was Polybius, Claudius's ars studiis, that is, his secretary responsible for patronage, and probably also, at some time, his ars libellis, or secretary responsible for petitions. Some time between late AD 43 and early AD 44, Polybius's younger brother died. Now, seeing as Polybius provided a direct route to Claudius that, critically for Seneca, bypassed Messalina, the opportunity was too good to miss, and Seneca grabbed it with both hands. Seneca wrote Polybius a consolation on the loss of his brother. It's known as the Consolatio ad Polybium, or the Consolation to Polybius. I've noted in a previous podcast that, unlike today's very private bereavement consolation messages, Roman consolationes were very public affairs in that they were actually intended for general publication. The consolatio was a genre for showcasing your style and erudition. A well-written consolation did its author's literary reputation no harm at all. But for Seneca, the consolation had another huge advantage. It was not, or was not supposed to be, a vehicle for a political agenda. The idea was that even if Messalina got wind of it, she would not consider a consolation a political approach, and it would sneak, in a manner of speaking, under her censorial radar. It was actually a crafty route past Messalina's prejudices. Under the pretense of offering solace to poor old Polybius, whom I would say in Seneca's defence he probably had met before, so the consolation wasn't coming from a complete stranger, Seneca could include a direct appeal to Claudius, who he hoped would also read the work at some stage, in order to get himself recalled from exile. It didn't work. From what Seneca wanted to achieve from it, the consolation was a complete and utter failure. I'll cover the Consolatio ad Polybium in much greater detail in my next podcast, but for now, suffice to say, Seneca totally overdid it. The overall effect of the book is, whichever way you want to see its intent, massively cringeworthy. Not, I'm afraid to say, Lucius Annaeus Seneca, my friend, one of your better efforts, and that's coming from me and I'm a big fan. History is silent on what Polybius, or Claudius for that matter if he read it, thought of Seneca's Todian overtures, but neither of them was convinced. Seneca was left languishing on his barren rock of a Mediterranean island. He wouldn't get off for another 4 or 5 years. Near the northern tip of Corsica, in the commune of Luri in the Cap Corse region of today, there's a ruined tower called the Torre di Seneca, where, local legend has it, the man himself spent his exile. But in reality, the structure was put up by the Genoese in the 16th century. It has actually nothing at all to do with Seneca. Just like Seneca's Consolatio ad Polybium, you can't take anything you see on that island at face value. So please join me in my next podcast, in which I'll talk about exactly how Seneca tried to hoodwink Claudius through Polybius into getting a ticket back to Rome. And I'll try to work out why that particular attempt at recall was such a disaster.